of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Everyone is here tonight except for Councilman Spohr. Next item on our agenda is citizen input. Citizen input is on our agenda tonight for those of you who would like to speak about something that isn't on our formal agenda, that however is the business of the council. Thank you. Item number three, latecomers agreement, Sagestone 5 edition. Pete Olson called in today and was wondering if we could take that off. He's not quite ready for that yet. So we're going to have an amended agenda this evening. Do I have an approval of the amended agenda?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item number two, approval of our consent agenda.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve our consent agenda. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item number four, ordinance creating OMC 12.16.287E entitled Water and Sewer Service Rates. Daryl?
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. For the record, Daryl Piercy, city planner. Before you for consideration is an ordinance that would set, would create section 12.16.287E. The purpose of this ordinance would be to establish main connection charges for a section of water line that the city installed in April of 2008. In order to reimburse the cost of that installation, adjacent property owners will be required under this ordinance to pay an additional fee for connection to repay, in essence, the overall cost to the city for the development of that water main. This fronts along Highway 26, but will serve properties located along Columbia Street. We have had this reviewed by the city engineer. They have identified a cost of $31.66 per front foot for the charge that would reimburse the city for the full cost of the development for the water line. On the advice of the attorney, we would like to add one brief comment or sentence to the end of the paragraph under section 12.16.287E, where it says main connection charges. And at the end of that paragraph, we would like to limit the period of time in which the city can collect interest or add to the interest charges and add the sentence for a period of 10 years. So in other words, limiting the period of time in which interest would accrue to 10 years, and that's statutory under state law. And so this will reflect current state law in terms of providing that limitation. Would also note that in the information that was handed out to you this evening, there was a modification to the fee number based on additional review and change by the city engineer. It now would read $31.66 per foot. Happy to respond to any questions.
So the one on our in front of us tonight is right?
Is correct, with the addition of for a period of 10 years, and we will add that in if you approve.
Questions? I would accept a motion creating OMC 12.16.287E titled Water and Sewer Service Rates as presented this evening.
I move that we approve this ordinance.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion?
Mine says 2879. Does everybody else see that?
There's a new one.
I figured out where that was coming from.
Yeah, there was a new one here. And we just add the 10-year period, no longer than 10 years. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item number 5, cargo container update. Daryl?
Thank you, Mayor. Once again, Daryl Piercy, city planner. You may recall at the study session that the council had a few weeks ago, we discussed the issue of cargo containers and the fact that the city staff has received a number of complaints in regards to existing cargo containers in the C2 and light industrial zones. At that time, council requested that we provide a list of where the locations are of those containers. We have provided you that list together with a map and printouts from the assessor's office of each of the properties that are subject to those complaints. I believe that most of the council members have had an opportunity to review those and to visit the sites if you chose to. We're before you once again to seek additional direction as to how you would like staff to proceed in regards to the existing cargo containers and processing potential applications in the future. We believe that we heard a pretty strong consensus prior to your viewing of these sites that the existing cargo containers would probably be something that you would like to see remain through a process of either allowing them, limiting them to a 2-year period, but short of actually requiring them to go through the conditional use permit process. We would like to get additional feedback and direction from the council this evening, if that's possible, as to how to proceed with these current locations that do not have conditional use permits, which are considered to be required under our code.
So council had an opportunity to go through the industrial and commercial areas and look at some of these cargo containers.
You know, some of them never even realized they were there. They were so inconspicuous. You said you received some complaints. What were they from people that were denied that went around and started looking for them?
Yes. What happened is we received an initial complaint of a cargo container at a location. We investigated that complaint through our code enforcement officer. The code enforcement officer wrote a letter to that individual. The individual agreed to remove the cargo container, but then pointed out all of the other locations and filed formal complaints on those locations where cargo containers were also located. So it resulted in a single complaint. And that person then complained about the others that were in the vicinity. So we felt some obligation through our code enforcement officer to continue the enforcement process on those, since we had a cooperative person on the first code enforcement action.
When we first started talking about this, I thought we were talking residential, and I was I'm really opposed to that. I mean, that should not be. But in commercial and industrial areas, I don't see a problem with it, as long as it's done tastefully. I mean, by tastefully, I don't pile them 3 high and 12 across, you know, the back end of a lot. That would be in bad taste, I think. But I think if it's done in a good manner, I don't see a problem with it.
Yeah, I really don't see a problem with it at all. And you're talking about using a 2-year
conditional
use? You know, because if it's not kept up in that 2 years, then we've got something to work with when we come in to renew it.
Good point. If I may, the council initially set it up on the theory that if a person needed temporary storage, allow them this for up to 2 years. But if they needed long-term storage, the position was they should build a structure and not use a discarded seagoing container as their storage. So I guess the first question for the council is do you want to reverse the previous council's position that their intent was these only be used as a short-term storage device and that they be replaced with permanently built structures. Number one, for appearances, and number two, for tax purposes, because the seagoing container isn't taxed, it's personal property. Whereas if they build storage, on-site storage, it will be taxed as an improvement to the land, and the city gets the benefit of that. So I think that's maybe the first question the council needs to decide is, do you want to limit them to 2 years, 4 years, no limit? How do you want to do that? And then the next part is, if you're going to allow them, are you going to continue the conditional use process or another process? I encourage you to stay with the conditional use process, because in land use planning, a conditional use permit establishes, prevents the kinds of things the mayor was mentioning. You know, it can regulate color, location, size, use. Those kinds of things can be spelled out very individually in each conditional use permit. And they do go through an actual hearing in front of your hearing examiner. In the old days, they would have gone to the Board of Adjustment to get that. But once they've been through that quasi-judicial hearing, they've had their property right protected, and if they don't appeal from that decision is final. Whereas if you go to a staff process, it doesn't have that finality of having been to a conditional use process. So,
I noticed Booker Auction here in Eltopia, they got containers and then they put some roof deals on it to make a building. That would not be good, because they put a container here and here, then they put the roof up here, and then they make a building and a shade. And then also these containers can come in the form of offices. I mean, you can buy them with front doors and windows in them, and so it needs to pertain only to storage, because you could have people moving these in and setting up shop.
Correct. As I understand this, correct, because we also need to recall that factory-built offices are permitted by state law in the city, and very similar to what the county put in back when this building was being built down the street. So those are factory-built offices, which I think are, as we can see, are fine. But yeah, but the kind the mayor's talking about, where people have converted these no longer seaworthy containers. I mean, that's the one thing I would encourage you to keep in mind, is they're out here available because they no longer meet the standards to be put on the boat and be hauled around. So they're already at end of their projected usable life, and you're giving them some more use. But and they obviously have uses. I mean, I have a client who rents them for work sites, so people can secure tools and things so they aren't stolen. And so they're very useful for those kinds of things, but they're only there during the period of construction, and then they're removed. They're not some kind of a permanent device. So I only throw those things out because if you're going to wade into this, I think you ought to kind of wade carefully and really decide where you want to go and what goals you're trying to accomplish.
I've got a couple of comments here too. Talking about that, you know, a lot of times in construction work and whatnot, you use several of those containers out there, and you'll have part of them for storage, you'll have part of them for offices and space like that, for temporary personnel, it's lunch rooms and whatnot, and so you got to be careful how you designate what you want to do with those. And another comment, what happens if we got somebody that comes in here and decides to take a piece of our industrial property and make a storage area for containers, say a drop-off point. Mm-hmm. You pick those up and you take them over the hill or whatever, back and forth, and you end up with several hundred of them. How's this going to affect something like that? I mean, there's a couple of different situations. But
your current ordinance wouldn't prohibit that, because if the storage, empty or full, of containers, I mean, I think that's what you're referring to, those. There are now these services starting up that if I've got too much stuff to keep in my house, I rent one of these things and they'll haul it somewhere and store it for me. And then if I move, they'll move it to another place near where I'm going to live. They would be permitted under your current scheme. They'd simply be a kind of industrial storage. But you're not talking about the person at the business going into it and getting their stuff out of the container. That's what this ordinance was aimed at, was that having these things replace site-built storage.
Your second comment was like Garcia out here.
Well, yeah, I'll drop off points.
I'm sure that's why he expanded out there, is that he wants to park containers on this side so he don't have to. That shouldn't impact him at all, because he'll be rotating them out weekly, monthly, daily. But I think we're just talking about storage containers. Containers for storage only.
We're just looking for comments from the council. I like the way they are. They blend in and they're not obtrusive. We like the 2-year, we like the 4-year. So we could get comments, we'll write them down, change the ordinances to reflect what you tell us, and then we'll bring it back to you.
So say if somebody took their container out to build a storage onto the building. So now that they build the storage onto the building, then they have to bring that up to the current codes, right? That whole building?
That would fall under the inspection.
The new portion of the construction would need to meet current codes, and once they hit a certain value threshold, which is usually 50% of the existing structure, then they would have to bring it all up to code. But until they met that threshold, they could add just a storage facility on the side of a building and only meet today's codes for that portion of the construction.
So right now, do we have a code that keeps them from putting the container out front?
This.
Yes.
Oh, just one. It says to the rear.
Yeah, and the reason is that it's yes is because we do have currently a conditional use permit process that you go through where that's reviewed and standards are applied.
There is currently a conditional use process.
Yes, and that's why we're bringing the issue to you, is because we're now faced with a number of containers that for whatever reason have been placed, have not been enforced. In some cases, it appears as though those folks have been told that they're allowed, and yet within our code, we have a conditional use permit process that requires a public hearing, that requires a 2-year time frame for the placement of the structures, and yet some have been here for many, many years. And so to now go in and create an enforcement action on those people was something that we felt we should bring to the council, because it's clear that there has not been a consistent approach to that enforcement over the years.
What was the original was they could be used for 2 years and then you were to build a new?
If you, the theory was if you need this storage for this long, build storage here and remove your container, and because if you're doing that much business, then provide for it, but don't keep this former seagoing container here.
But through history, they were not told that.
Well, I guess myself, I like that thought. Eventually, get that. Maybe give them a 2-year extension.
There you
know what I mean? Have it 2 years, they come back again and ask for, but after 4, to me, they've had plenty of time to get to the point where they can build something.
One of the options we've outlined in the staff memorandum to you is that we recognize all existing containers from this point, provide them a 2-year period to remove those, but all new containers coming into the city would be required to go through the conditional use permit. And then that seems perhaps to be a fair way to address those existing containers that may or may not have been told that they're allowed, and then to enforce the code on all new containers that would be coming into the city. That's one of the options that we've outlined for you in your paper.
Do I recall in that conversation that there was something about conditional use permits? You have to go through a process and it becomes expensive and time-consuming?
It's a little pricey and it's a little time-consuming. I think we estimated it was about a $1,500 to $2,000 process for the applicant, and it takes about a 90-day period to actually, from start to finish, to go through that process by the time the appeal period expires. So there is some process involved, and I think you heard the explanation from the attorney this evening. The previous council wanted that process so that there was some finality to the decision, and there was an effort and opportunity for the public to weigh in on any discussion relating to those issues. So That was the basis for the process, and there is a process that we currently have in our code. It just has not been followed.
So the cost is $1,500 to $2,000?
Well, our estimate is for a conditional use permit about $1,500 to $2,000.
That's more than the container cost. Pretty much. I mean...
Well, the council has adopted an ordinance that the hearing examiner is a service, and it's a user fee. And Mr. Pinkerton's about, I think, $750 a time for an ordinary, if it doesn't take extra time or an unusual situation. Then there are some publication costs and notification costs and some staff time that are going to be wrapped into that, that are user fees to the person. And I think Daryl's probably about right on. Now, the mayor had mentioned, and I think the suggestion from staff is very good, that if you're going to let these folks stay where they are and then deal with them from this time forward, suggest you adopt an ordinance amendment that sets a bright line of October 1 this year or September, but pick a bright line day when everybody knows the rules. And then, if you're talking about, as Mr. Wilson said, they're going to get 2 years with a CUP with an opportunity to stay for two more, you could have the two-year extension process handled by staff, because staff is working with a set of conditional uses that were established in the hearing process. And so if you wanted to give them up to 4 years or 5 years, whatever number you want to give them, to decide, yes, my business is going to make it, I really need this storage, I should build something permanent, or no, I don't think so, I'm just going to take it out, you know, however you want to deal with it. The other thing that's really not addressed here that the council may want staff to look into is how to deal with Walmart. Walmart, I suspect, is one of your biggest abusers of this, because Walmart has such an inventory turnover that I know in the stores in Moses Lake and Ephrata, they are constantly having containers parked back there, especially in the holiday season. And now, for the back-to-school season, they can't keep all the inventory in the store. And so we've had to make some different arrangements for stores that need to have a volume, a place to hold extra volume of merchandise in these containers for short periods of time. And we work out a process where they identify us, and they pay a fee for that. So I just throw that up. If you're going to look at your container situation, it might be good to look at all the aspects of it.
Speaking of that, maybe some other cities and what they're doing with the containers.
Exactly. Yeah. And we did a little bit of research on that, well, more than just a little, I suppose, and for the most part, most cities actually ban them altogether. There's an increasing effort to just simply prohibit them, other than for temporary use, such as the Walmarts, limited to a period of 30 to 45 days. But in terms of permanently using the ocean-going storage containers, there's a growing trend in the cities to completely ban them. And I would suggest that in the ones that we contacted directly and then through the Association of Washington Cities, we're running about 60 to 80% of the cities now have an outright ban for use on storage.
In commercial and industrial?
In all zones within the city boundaries. Now, they're still very prevalent in counties outside urban areas, but within the urban areas, there's an increasing effort, appears to be an increasing effort to ban them.
Chief, did you write a letter to Eamon about that?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I tried to find my copy. I must have deleted it. It was just an email.
Okay, I read that. Did anybody else read that?
No.
I had a copy.
You all got copies, but basically it's what Daryl is proposing. The two-year and two-year.
Two-year period to keep it, and then eventually there was a time limit, I think, on it where you need to build your own. Mm-hmm. It seemed like to me it was a reasonable suggestion. I don't know if I could find a copy of that.
If it's agreeable with council, we'll take these comments and the email the chief sent me, incorporate them into something for your review at your next regular meeting or the workshop. We can do it by next week.
We'll do it.
Okay.
I know I've got four of them out at my shop, and after a fashion, they just become a junk. I mean, you just throw them in there just to get them out of sight. And the first couple of years, we used them very wisely, and now it's just go throw it in the in the container. But I think maybe the two-year thing with an extension on 2 years would be more than fair. And the people that have them now would have 4 years, 2 years plus two more to put up a permanent structure.
Then, of course, if you do adopt that, we would go through the notification process, notify everybody that has them of the new ordinance and tell them the 2 year plus 2 year. So nobody could say they were left out, because we have a list of all of them in the city now.
I'd like to see that extension, because for new business in particular, you know, it's hard to get going. So it'd be nice to be able to give them an extra 2 years if they need it and let them roll. So
it's hard for some of the businesses that have been here 20, 30 years right now.
Yeah.
So. Eamon, did we talk to any of these? We have all our business owners. Did we go out and talk to any of them?
I'm sorry?
Did we go out and talk to any of the business owners? And
I don't know if we did or not.
We have had conversations with a number of them, not all, and have been in contact with them. One, to describe the process to bring it into compliance, and the other is to let them know that we would be speaking with the council in regards to the issue. And they were certainly invited to be part of that discussion. No one notified that we would be talking about this both at your study session and this evening. So we have been trying to engage those folks to get their thoughts and opinions. And I think all of them have indicated that if they had to go through a conditional use permit process, they would, but they'd prefer to be able to just leave them at least for a temporary period until they can make other arrangements.
We did invite a number of people that have them existing to come to the meeting so you could hear from them their comments, and for two different meetings tonight and the previous one, and there's nobody here.
Well, maybe we'll notify them at our next meeting when we'll probably have some more discussion on this. It'll probably be go through another workshop. Maybe invite them to our next workshop and get their input.
Thank you.
Item number six, Noel Communications Agreement.
Well, we're going to switch from cargo containers to fiber optics contract. Just to make sure everybody's on the same page or pages, you have on your desk what's called a one-page service order, and it's down towards the bottom center. It's highlighted with the yellow marker. The number is $8,000. It's highlighted. Anybody not have that? That was put on your desk tonight. Okay, so we're going to be considering the service order, which is just like you calling in the cable company or satellite company and you say, come and hook us up. That's what we're saying to Noel Communication, is come and hook up fiber to City Hall. So we have the service order, and then we also have the contract that's attached to the agenda memo. And I'd like to go over a couple points in the contract so that we're all clear. The contract is behind the gray agenda memo. If you start with page one of the contract with Noel Communication, points one through four are on page one. Turning to page two, which is on the back side of page one, you have five, six, and seven. Page three, you have 8, 9, 10, and 11. And I'd like to address a couple issues in item number 10, continuance of service. Anybody lost? Okay, continuance of service. The first sentence says, following the expiration of the terms contained in the contract, this agreement shall continue in effect for 1 month. And what that 1 month identifies is a 1 month negotiation period to go into a new contract. I have scratched that out, put my initials, and wrote the word two there, and Noel has agreed to that. So we have 60 days to negotiate a new contract instead of 30 days. Reading on down that same paragraph, 2 months until renewal is negotiated between customer and Noel Communications. Unless terminated by either the customer or Noel Communications upon 30 days written notice before the end of each term.
Then the next sentence is lined out, and it starts, "If the customer fails to accept a no communications offered renewal of the original contract within 30 days, after the end of the original term, no communications will begin billing the renewal rate, whichever is agreed, monthly basis at 110% of the prior contracted price or the offered renewal rate, whichever is greater." And what that says is they automatically get a 10% bump, okay? So that is all taken out of there. I said, no, we can't agree to that. And they've agreed to take that out. We just negotiate the price. They don't get an automatic 10% increase, okay? Going to page 4 is item 12. Going to page 5, items 13 and 14. Page 6 is item 15, no changes. The last page, which has a signature block at the very bottom, item 16, the term of this agreement, says for life, and we've changed that to 3 years so that we have an opportunity to negotiate it. So those are the changes to the contract. They have been agreed to by Noel, and if you approve the service order and this agreement, the city would be fiber ready. Now recall the past two meetings, Stan, our IT person, has stood before you and talked about the agreement with Saddle Mountain, which is different than this agreement, but we overlapped when we talked about the fees. Remember, Mark Spohr asked about the $300 per month fee that we would pay, and we talked about that in conjunction with the Saddle Mountain contract, but that has nothing to do with it. That $300 you talked about is this $300 in this contract or the service order. Okay, so it's not doubling up, it's the same $300. Everybody good with that? The second item I want to point out is on the first page of the agenda memo under budget. It says when we receive the final numbers on Monday, the $5,800 will be split between Saddle Mountain and the balance of fiber to public works. That $5,800 is a typo. It should have been $8,500. And now, if you look at the service order that you have, it has a highlighted in yellow spot towards the center bottom, the one-page service order. Highlighted is $8,000 as opposed to the $8,500. We had a reduction of $500 between the last time we talked and tonight's contract. So we have a savings of $500 there. So the bottom line to the contract is we will contract with Noel Communications out of Yakima for a 3-year term to provide fiber service to the city. The benefits are faster service. We will be able to broadcast or send heavily laden data information. For example, the CBHA and the hospital, they transmit MRI tests over fiber. And we can do building permits and engineering drawings and things like that, which are a benefit to the city and contractors in the city, because now they don't have to pay for all these drawings, which our code requires 5 sets. Now they can send them to us with fiber and not have to pay all that cost of drawings. They have to have them for the construction, obviously, on the site, but they can send them to us for review electronically. Just to back up a minute, the history, over a year ago, the county spent just over $125,000, brought fiber to the county building. Now, Noel is now going out and doing the spokes of the wheel with the fiber. For example, when they run from 7th Avenue to City Hall, the probation office, which is located right over there by the post office, they're connecting on too. They're going to get a drop for their fiber. So it's going to benefit as a city as we sprawl out. Many, many locations will have fiber. For example, McCain's already has it up on Lee Street. But this is a big benefit to the city. It's an attraction when we promote our city economically. We try to entice businesses to come here saying, yes, we have fiber. We're fiber ready is a definite advantage. So with that being said and the corrections pointed out, we would ask that you adopt the no communications agreement and the service order.
So is the probation department getting paid part of that?
They're going to pay their drop.
Their part.
Which is before us.
Now, remember, our $8,000 is split between Saddle Mountain and the city, so our cost is $4,000. They pay for their own drop, yes.
So is this a utility tax thing for us? Will be drawing taxes off of this? As a city?
Like the cable that we talked about tonight, it's not.
Telephone or whatever else gets it, I don't know.
No, gas, telephone.
Well, now, if we know they're doing telephone over fiber, that is subject to a utility tax because it's a telephone service. But the fiber itself, by federal law, can't be taxed by a local jurisdiction.
What about the business going through it?
The telephone, yes, we could.
I'm just curious about that.
Or, as we talked before the meeting, if we had a content-only video franchise, that would be taxed. But the dark fiber itself is beyond being regulated by us.
So we would ask that you approve the service order and contract with Noel Communications.
Amy, where are you taking the funds out of?
I'm sorry?
Where are you taking the $8,000 out of?
The facility fund. Didn't we say that here? Utility tax fund that currently has an ending fund balance of $775,000. It's under the budget section in the agenda memo.
But don't we have a $25,000 limit on that?
There is, but you as a council can waive that. You can approve it if you want. Or we can take it out of the ending fund and the general fund. It's your option. This is what finance recommends.
I would say that we need to take it out of the general fund.
Ending fund balance of general fund.
Yeah.
You can do that too.
There's
what, like 1.5
million.
1.5 million in that fund. So
yeah.
Either one, there's plenty of money.
Yeah, I'm with Eleanor on that one. I'd like to see us switch over to that one. Because it seems like we're always breaking this $25,000 deal here. So why do we have it on there, I guess?
Okay, so you want to take it out of the general fund instead of the utility tax fund?
Mm-hmm.
We'll make that change.
With that, I'd make a motion.
A second.
It's been moved and seconded that we sign the Noel Communications agreement to be funded out of the general fund. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Just so we're clear, that included the service order.
Okay. Item number 7 is an ordinance repealing Othello Municipal Court Code Chapter 14.32 entitled Specifications for Public Works. Jay?
Good evening. In reviewing the OMC, Mr. Whitaker found that the Chapter 14.32 entitled Specifications for Public Works is no longer needed or valid. What's included in 1432 is subsections 1432.010, 1432.020. 010 consists of referring to standard specifications for municipal public works contracts, and it goes back to 1969. That's just no longer valid, not even needed. 1432.020 refers to the warranty for the work to be 1 year for public works contracts. And warranties are now standard 2 years for municipal construction. Both of these items are actually referenced in all of our contracts now, and it just makes this obsolete and not even needed anymore. So we are asking that it be repealed in its entirety. Any questions on that one?
Just kind of cleaning up the...
It's an extra page. We don't need
the
it.
Books. Do we have a motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we repeal Municipal Code 14.32 in its entirety. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Item number 8, resolution to accept easement and water line within Columbia Cola Store plat.
Columbia Coal Store recently completed, well, not recently, last September, completed an expansion of their facility out there. And what this required was for them to add on, they had to move a city water line and easement. I've got a drawing here that shows that. Previously, this was the edge of the building of Coal Store right here. And we had an easement and a water line through here to complete a fire line loop around this facility. The expansion required building on out here like such. So what they did was asked in their design plans if they could move this water line and move this easement both to the outside of their new facility, which they have done.
All plans for construction were approved by the city. They were all constructed to city standards, and now we have received the as-builts for this. We have received the documented easements, and that's not very clear.
Can you raise it up too, Jay? Raise the paper, move the, there you go. There you go.
Sorry about that. This being Lee Road down here, you can see it right here, and then McMahon up here up to the north. Once this was constructed, I've X'd out everything that was there previously that's been removed, abandoned, moved over to the outside of the new facility, and we have received the documented easements as built, and we received the warranty for this. And as soon as council accept this project as complete, then that begins the 2-year warranty period, which we just talked about in the previous agenda item, for this water line.
Questions?
Got one question there. What happens if they add on that again? How come they didn't go out further for extra expansion? Just my own personal thought there. Why, you know, if they add on that building again, they're going to go through the same process, right?
Well, that'll be their expense and to the new standards.
they must
not be going to do that. I bet you. I think they're as big as they want to be out there, it looks like.
But anyway, yeah.
65 people.
I would accept a motion to accept the water line and easement from Columbia Coal Store as presented.
Make that motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item number 9, resolution to surplus tenant court matting.
You do have before you a handout of a resolution that is labeled second option that goes along with the agenda memo and the resolution that's attached to the agenda memo, and I'll explain that. As part of the 2009 budget, the tennis courts in Lions Park were reconstructed. This required removing all the matting from the 4 courts that are there. And these mats were purchased before my time here and laid out on the courts. After it was removed, we have intended to move 2 of those courts to Kiwanis Park because that's how big they are there. And here we have 2 more tennis courts worth of mats that are laid out and stored. We have to store them is basically what we have to do. And I was approached by Dave Whitney, the maintenance supervisor for the Warden School District, and they expressed an interest in these extra mattings. And I included the letter, I thought it was on here. Yes, it's on the very back, requesting these to be surplused and donated to the Warden School District. As an option, if that's not what council wishes to do, we still have no need for these mats, and we would like to propose 2 different options here. The resolution donating them to the Warden School District, and another resolution that just declares them a surplus item, which means they could be bid out for. And we're just looking for some direction to get rid of these. But the Warden School District has expressed an interest and a need for these mats. So we're asking for council's direction on which way to go.
So on your option number 2, you declare them surplus and then
They would be advertised.
You got to take them to Booker's or?
They'd either go to Booker's or we could advertise them to the highest bidder. And these are a snap lock type mat. They've seen probably the majority of their use. I think Othello has seen the majority of the use, but Warden expressed an interest that they think they could get some more use out of them.
So, Mr. Whitaker, are we going to give this to the Ward School District?
Well, as Jay has described, they appear to have very little value, and that the council determines that they have such little value, it's not worth trying to dispose of them by hauling them all the way to Booker's, and that they can just be hauled away by the Warden School District. That way you're not gifting them. This is similar to the police radios that the frequency was wrong or whatever and they couldn't be fixed and they had no real value to any real policeman, so you gave them to somebody, fireman or somebody. Anyway, it's similar to that.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure we could do that. So I don't have a problem with getting to Warden School District. I think it's great if we can bless somebody around us with our excess that we have. So that's me personally.
And they have offered to transport them themselves, so it wouldn't take our Public Works crew time and effort to move them.
Are they in a roll or a stack? Or
right now they're in 8x16 stacks on a truck in the Well 3 yard. We rolled the ones, the half that we wanted to keep for Kiwanis. We actually put them in rolls, and they are stored right now at the city dog pound.
I would you put that in the form of a motion then?
I'll make a motion that we donate the last two court mats, test court mats, to Ward School District.
Second.
They have to pick it up and move it for us.
Declare a surplus first?
I don't know.
It does, yeah, the resolution does.
Okay.
Okay. I would accept a resolution to declare the tennis court matting for the two courts surplus.
So moved.
Second.
Okay.
Any discussion?
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you very much. I'll be contacting them. They've got 10 days from today's date to actually transfer them. So. Thank you.
Did we do that right?
Yeah, you're fine. We'll fix it.
Yeah. Item number 10. Resolution to approve use of Lions Park for Fiesta Amistad. Debbie?
Good evening. The staff met with Emil Martinez to discuss the details of the upcoming American Fiesta Amistad. And this is scheduled for Friday, August 14th and Saturday, August 15th. At that meeting, we had Public Works and the Police Department. We had Rebecca doing the vendor licensing and myself. So Friday's events will begin at 5 and they'll conclude at 10 p.m. Vendors will open up at 5 o'clock and music will be provided from 6 to 10. The Fiesta Committee is paying for security for overnight patrol on Friday night. The next day, Saturday, the events will open up at noon in Lions Park and will conclude at 10 p.m. Mr. Martinez advised that they will start turning down the music volume at 8:45 p.m. unless on both nights unless asked by the Othello Police Department to do so earlier. On the budget, we expend approximately $1,200 for Public Works employee costs for the two-day event. Cost for the porta potties is approximately $420, and the city provides extra garbage containers and pays for those landfill fees. Their first event was held in 2002, so this will be their seventh year for the Fiesta on the Stock. Staff recommends that the council approve the resolution authorizing use of city property for the American Fiesta on the Stock, which is scheduled on August 14th and 15th, 2009.
Question, was there any talk about cleanup? I know the 4th of July deal, man, there was stuff everywhere because I was down there the next morning.
That's going to be, the Public Works will be there on Saturday morning and Sunday morning for cleanup.
So we're doing the cleanup then?
Mm-hmm. We've also asked them, although he did say they're going to have a small group, aren't they, of kids that are going to go around with some bags? And I don't know which group of kids that they have lined up for that, but there'll be kids, and they do announce it quite a bit in both English and Spanish to help with cleaning up the litter, but there's just so much of it, and yeah, gets away from everybody.
That cleanup is part of the $1,200 cost that you...
Public Works coming in, yeah.
I know they got that big vacuum or whatever it was, they were running, picking all that up, but they seem to do a pretty good job.
I know it's helped to the activity in their hiring security for the night. Is any of those vendors planning to camp at night anymore?
He thinks that there might be one, but the camping is only allowed in the parking lot up on on the adjacent parking lots. And he thinks that there's usually one that stays up on the hamlet side in a motorhome. And, you know, so they'll be there. But he didn't know of any other ones. Each vendor gets one car permit or vehicle permit, so they can pull in, and a lot of them will pull out that night and then pull back in the next morning. But there may be one up there or two. We only know of the one right now.
I think in the past, the biggest complaint has been noise late, and the last year they toned it down early, and I think it came off really good last year.
Yeah. The chief did discuss with him that we may ask them to turn it down, and he agreed with that.
It's not related to this particularly, but camping in the park, I think it's an issue. Right now it's not permitted, but I think address it in the future sometime, because when we have large baseball tournaments and other stuff, there's a lot of groups that will come in. Maybe we could look at it as a permitting process or something when there's a tournament or something going on. I know the school end up accommodating a lot of those tenors for the ball tournament, but I'd like to address it in the future possibly.
Good idea.
Yeah, I've had that same comment several times, so good idea.
I would entertain a motion to approve the application for the Fiesta Amistad as presented.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you, Debbie. Item number 11, unfinished business.
I've got one little comment. Back, I don't know how long ago, probably 2, 3, 4 months ago. I couldn't go back in the minutes and look, but I had somebody come to me the other day from the Habitat for Humanities, and I know at one time we mentioned that house on about midway on 2nd and Hemlock, boarded up and whatnot. And I know we were going to look into it, see what we could do about that. I know if it could be sold or whatever, I think the Humanities would probably pick that up. But the problem we got right now, Habitat for Humanities wants to build one or two houses in those two lots that they've got. And the clients that they've got tend to live in those or buy them when they're completed says, I won't live there until the house cleaned up. So it presents a problem for them to go ahead and do their project without having something done with that house. I mean, either they got to fix it up or tear it down or do something. And I know we've made comments about other houses around town, but that one is really bad. And I think we should put some pressure on the owner to do something.
We're past that.
Okay.
Yeah, we're in deep in the process here right now.
That's good.
Yeah. I talked today. I came in to talk to Eamon about that. Talked to Darrell, and he said the process going through, they've been talking with the city attorney about a process that we go through so that it goes in. And so they're at that point where they're probably ready to move on that, and there are about three houses they're working on right now. The one over on the north side of the town?
On Pine.
Okay, and the other one is up on between 9th and 10th on Hemlock.
But it's they're dangerous.
Well, yeah.
You know, you've got kids going in there and out of there, and it's dangerous.
I drove by the one up on Hemlock this morning just to see, and yeah, part of the siding is gone, the windows are out of it, they're closed up, so, but Daryl evidently has a process on.
They're all processed, and they will come to you, like, if you recall the mid-check process that we went through. At the conclusion, they got to come to you and explain why they shouldn't have to comply, and then you make the final decision. So all three of those homes, the houses,
we're just counting the days off now, and then they'll be in here to try to explain why their house is like that.
Well, I knew that we had talked about it, and I knew we were had done something, but I hadn't heard anything, so that's one reason why I did it. I did get approached about it, so I thought I'd mention it today and talk about it. So.
Any more unfinished business? New business?
Got one more small item under new business. Maybe this is old business, too. What's the deal with the fire hydrant on 4th and Hemlock? Had that sack over it for about a month, 5 weeks, whatever. Is there something wrong with that, or something that we need to get parts for, or what's the process?
Yes, actually, we're conducting hydrant testing throughout the city right now, and that hydrant is not draining through the petcock at the bottom underground, and water comes boiling up through the valve. We conduct testing with the fire department and public works both, and that is an identified issue hydrant right there. The fire department and us are both aware of it, and we will be working on it. It's going to have to be dug up completely to figure out why this one does not drain.
Okay, so it's work in progress, huh?
City has received $310,000 for well number 6. Actually, we have got the funds, so we're for the rehabilitation of well number 6. Good news. Wednesday, July 29th at 2 p.m., staff and Gray and Osborne will conduct a public information meeting relative to the Highway 24 industrial project here at City Hall. 24th, or July 29th at 2 p.m. Cable Franchise Committee met with legal counsel tonight to discuss legal parameters and of the negotiations. Except Mark, he wasn't here, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. next week is a workshop. Be prepared to discuss committee activities, things that are going on in the committees that you're involved with. Appreciate that. I would like to thank all those who participated and donated to the Relay for Life Friday night. It was another successful year with more than $80,000 raised. So it just keeps getting bigger every year. I guess we'll conclude the meeting.
Mr. Mayor,
go ahead.
A week or so ago, the farmer's market opened down at the Pioneer Park, and some of the flower beds were pretty weedy, and there was a lot of dead plants and stuff in there, and I mentioned it to Jay and to one of the workers down here, and last Saturday when we had the farmer's market that was all cleaned up, was all weeded, it was nice, the plants were gone, first class, so people did a very nice job on it, and I think they need to know that, that they did really well, really good job on that place. So,
this is tough, this is our first summer without the inmates here, and yes. You know, we're getting it covered, and if there's an area that you see that needs some attention, just let Jay know. And it gets taken care of real quick.
From the Coyote Ridge that we're covering it without him. He may cut us off.
Send him a bill.
Yeah. Be an idea, too.
We'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Thanks for dinner.